Welcome to System Mastery, the podcast where we sometimes have to do a thing, even if it's really hot and we already did a thing today. On today's episode, we review a game about the deep caverns under New York and the pizza rats and roving packs of feral Giulianis that make it so unpleasant and dangerous. It's the game of subterranean urban fantasy, it's very LARPy, and you can play a dog in it. It's Underworld or Underground, I don't know, it's written in tag font. And it's System Mastery. Hey, John, before we begin today's show, would you like to do some announcement masteries?
Why, there's literally nothing more in this world that I would like to do.
Are you sure? Because I know where there's pizza.
Nothing more in this world.
What about the next?
Oh, in the next world, there's way more stuff I would like to do.
What about in an else world?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Obviously. I mean, if we were in an else world, I'd get to, I don't know, have like a cape, maybe a gas gun.
Be like one half of Batman or something.
Yeah, I'd be one half of Batman, and you'd be the other half of Batman, and together we'd be a Batman.
And we'd finally be my idea for the mod for everyone is John, which is everyone is Batman.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to play that. That's a game I want to play.
Of course it is.
But before we do that, we should read some ads, huh?
Ooh, hell yeah.
You know, as always, if you want to do an ad here on the show, all you got to do is go to our website, click the Give Us Some Money button. There's a set of links you can follow up that you can pay us. So about $75, and we will read an ad for you on the show. And without further ado, allow me to read an ad on the show.
And allow me to introduce myself. I'm a man of wealth and taste.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to do a Humpty Hump thing there real quick.
Oh, no. Goodness, no.
You're going to drink up all the Hennessy I had on my shelf.
If only you had Hennessy on your shelf.
I don't like Hennessy. As a System Mastery listener, you have a refined palate that
for
wants...
For Hennessy.
As a System Mastery listener, you have a refined palate that wants some indie flair in their gaming. So if you're also into miniature wargaming, Fortified Niche is just the podcast for you. Inspired by the male friendships on System Mastery and I Don't Even Own a Television, it's two guys talking about indie-ish wargames. We review miniature wargames that weren't produced by Games Workshop or Privateer Press, or any of the other giants.
Yeah, you know how there's a lot of giants walking around dropping minis on people?
Mm-hmm. It's weird that they're so good at carving such tiny figurines.
Yeah, of course, to the giants, mm-hmm. these are...
I believe it's the New York Giants they're referring
yes,
to.
Yes, of course, obviously. Yeah. The New York Giants wandering around mm-hmm. placing little miniatures inside people's stockings.
Yes. Our hosts take a game like Zona Alpha, Carnival, or the Silver Bayonet, play it on Tabletop Simulator, and then tell you all about its ups and its downs. Fortified Niche covers not only the rules, but also army building, excuses to buy the miniatures, and whether we should get a second edition of Chain of Command. We also have some words about game fluff that excuses imperialism and cheesecake sculpts. I assume they have some negative words about those things.
I love a good sculpt of a cheesecake.
New episodes of Fortified Niche go up every other Monday, supplemented by short blog posts illustrated with lavish tabletop simulator screenshots.
So lavish.
That's Fortified Niche. And you can find us on Spotify and other places where podcasts dwell.
You're goddamn right.
That's neat. I mean, I don't know really what constitutes a giant in that industry, but I mean, I'm seeing a list of games I've never heard of there, so I assume I'm assuming things like even Atomic Mass count as giants in that industry.
I mean, if one of us has heard of it, probably it's a giant.
That's probably fair.
Yeah. Well, you know, because we keep up with the New York Giants.
We do. I'm very up on the New York Giants and the New York Knicks.
The New York Knicks.
Yeah, the all-giraffe basketball team.
Yeah.
Yeah. So once again, that was Fortified Niche, but we are not done yet. Today we have a special two ads to read.
Ooh, two-parter. Two-parter.
All right, so coming up next is John with an ad read.
Hell yeah, Jamie Lindemann and Nerd House Games are very pleased to announce their first crowdfunding campaign with Heist: Masterminds. It's a card game where, no, wait, do not fast forward yet. I am not done talking. You sit the fuck down.
Whoever fast forward through us, we're charming.
We're fucking adorable. So they also write role-playing games and listen to this very show for design inspiration. But we're here to talk about the card game.
Mm, yeah, probably inspired by one of the card games on our show.
One of the many card games we review.
Yeah.
Do you want a card game that doesn't waste a lot of turns getting you into the action?
Yes.
One that blends a light tone with a retro heist movie vibe.
Similarly, yes.
Well, by God, you must go check out the Game Found campaign. It's at tinyurl.com/heist-masterminds.
Hmm.
So you hire a crew, you beat the heat, and claim your reward.
Ah.
So campaign starts July 9th, so it's coming up. Be ready for that. Favorite it. Love
yep,
it.
Yep, go check it out. I'm sure it's already there to be favorited and followed.
Yep. And it'll end August 7th, so even if you are listening to this into the far future of about a month from now, you still have a chance.
That's right.
So make your pledge, grab a copy before then, and if you follow early, you might get yourself, wait for it, a free token of appreciation.
Oh, ho, ho!
Hey!
I love tokens of things.
There's nothing I love more than a nice token.
Mm.
That's why I'm always taking the subway.
And doing laundry in obscure laundromats.
Exactly.
Which is also my favorite band.
Obscure laundromats.
Yeah.
But if you're listening to an RPG show to hear about RPGs because you like RPGs on an RPG show for RPG likers, then you should head on over to Nerd House Games. That's Nerd House, H-A-U-S.
Mm-hmm.
So nerdhousegames.itch.io to check out all of their RPGs. And if you don't like heist movies, that's not your thing. Maybe you'd like some one-shot games about cryptid hunting, looming disasters, tragic post-apocalyptic lovers, or undead identity crises.
I do!
I want all of them!
Yeah.
Give it to me now! I'm like Veruca Salt with RPGs!
And bean feasts.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm definitely like Veruca Salt with bean feasts.
Yeah.
You know how I get with a bean feast.
Of course I do.
So you've got options when it comes to bringing a Nerd House game to your table. So, you know, help them out. Keep them making great stuff. And that's, you know, it's good for us. It's good for them. It's good for you. It's good for me.
The
industry. Good for the Lord Jesus Christ.
It's good for the industry. And, why? As always, we're going to have all these links and associated details on the website as well. So if you are looking to follow up on any of these but don't remember the URLs that we've been reading off, just stop by SystemMasteryPodcast.com, look at the post for this episode, and you'll be able to follow those links right on through. Thank you so much. We're going to get to the show now. Please go support our sponsors. It helps us to help them. And then it helps them to help us, I think. I don't remember the exact...
It's all a big feedback loop.
That's right. That's exactly how it works. And until then... Wait, that'll be the end of the show.
Wait, hold on.
Hold on. Let's get to the show. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to System Mastery. It's me, Jeff, joined, as always, by my co-host, John. John, how are you today?
Oh, I'm kind of warm and headachy and... Everything sucks because California's real hot.
Yeah, it's kind of hot right now. Although the moment you said that, we're going to, you know, you've unleashed the.
Oh, I've unleashed the southern gentleman who will come a knocking at our door saying, why, 'tis 105 upon this very day.
I live in Death Valley in an oven and you guys have no right to complain.
95 degrees Fahrenheit. Why would I but dream of such luxury?
So. Yeah, it's steamy out here today. I mean, it's not like Death Valley. It's like 85.
Well, I mean, where I live, it's almost 100.
Fair enough. Yeah. So good. I'm glad to hear you've managed to make it over to this side of the hills then, so you can bask in my coolness.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Exactly.
And also bask in coolness is Underworld. It is Underworld.
And also Baskin-Robbins.
I thought it was Underground. I thought we read Underground.
Wait a minute. What the fuck Is this one of those Mandela effects?
No, it's just that this book's... I don't know why... I assume they did this because one of the things you can be in this game is a tagger.
Yes, but this has the font of like, oh, you know how people put up tags on walls with spray paint?
Mm-hmm.
That for a font so that you can't read anything.
Well, I would say the biggest problem with that, it would be more readable if it wasn't... It's written in a tag font. And then overlaid over the same word again, written in a different tag font. So it's not even a drop shadow. It's just the word underworld on top of the word underworld in two different fonts and two different colors. And it just makes it harder to read than it needed to be.
Yeah. It's not a pleasant read. I'll tell you that.
Well, the cover isn't. Also, did you notice that Zuckuss is on the cover of this book? You know, the famous
Zuckus?
Moth-like bounty hunter of
Star
Wars
fame. We're not talking Forlom. We're talking Zuckus, baby.
He could also be a Forlom. They both have big moth eyes. But either way, you've got yourself a Zuckus or Forlom situation happening right there on the cover.
No, I'll tell you this.
Just saying. Episode crossover.
I'm just saying. There's also another picture of, like, a bug guy later on in this book. No mention of bug guys anywhere.
No, I think there's supposed to be that one.
I mean, they'd be freaks.
Freaks, yeah. Because almost all the freaks that actually get mentions in this are basically animalistic. So to get the point across, to give you the ultimate elevator pitch for this.
To give you a nice dollar to go see a movie.
Or get your dick slapped, whatever you're going to do.
Get your dick slapped at the movies.
Yeah, for the super boilerplate pitch of this, have you ever read Neverwhere? Neil Gaiman's Neverwhere?
Y'all ever heard about this Neverwhere?
What if it was New York? Done. Okay, we're all set. Thank you so much for listening.
What if instead of British, you were American?
I mean, to be fair, the book does have a kind of recommended reading and bibliography section about halfway through, and it does actually point out that, like, without Neverwhere, this book wouldn't exist.
Yeah.
Which, yes, duh. Because it is 100% Neverwhere in New York, the LARP.
And of course, if you have listened to our show for any amount of time, we've been doing this for damn near 10 years now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if there's one thing that's going to get Jeffa going, it's someone being up New York's ass.
This isn't as bad about that as, I mean, it tries the same thing that Neverwhere tries, which is to really cloud the layers. When they write the stories, technically they're pulling history from New York or from the world at large, you know, or in that case, London. Like, you could probably, if you were Neil Gaiman and you were his weird collection of eccentric traits and things he learned over the course of his life, suss out what his inspiration for the Marquis de Carrabba was.
Uh-huh.
But this is the same thing where you have, like, he's the murderer who steals the eyes of people who want to be Broadway starlets, and he's called the Buckskin. And you're like, what the fuck is the Buckskin? What does that have to do with Broadway stealing guy? What does that mean? And it's probably something that someone who knows enough about New York could suss out, but I can't.
God knows, I cannot. I mean, it's also one of those things that when you get into the, like, let me tell you about all the different areas of the underground, and it's just like, well, if you're at 124th Street and you go down to the Upper West Bronx, and I'm like, I don't know what any of this is. Fuck you. No, I don't care.
Yeah, there is a section. I'll admit I started skimming after we left the section where it was describing the lords of each zone, and it was just like these little one-paragraph descriptions of parts of New York. I mean, ultimately, I kind of started skipping that section heavily after I encountered the first person I was pretty sure was a black guy in the entire book.
Yeah.
And he preferred to go by he had a name. I don't remember what it was off the top of my head, but it said he doesn't use it.
Oh, he he likes you to call him Peeps.
Oh, yeah.
Or
the head N-word in charge.
Indeed.
I think he might be the only described as such black person in the book. So
might be.
That's ballsy is what that is.
Oh, yeah. Well, especially because it's like, where's the only black person in this book? Why, Crooklyn.
Crooklyn, of course.
Where all the hoods are.
Yeah. If you haven't read Neverwhere, however, so you have no idea what I'm going on about, it's a story about there's a city, and underneath that city is a subway system. And then there's decades of history about interesting tunnels and albino sewer alligators and crazy things that happen deep in the subterranean world beneath New York. And then they just zhuzh that up with a little fantasy. You know, they're like, it's true. There's gods and stuff down there, and there's ancient magics, and the world above will never be aware of the world below, but the world below is aware of us.
Yep.
That's that kind of thing. And it always has kind of, it's always a neat concept. It's fun to think about this kind of urban fantasy exploration where you go down under New York and can, like, treat with the sewer alligators and so on. But it always bears a risk.
Yeah. I was going to say, the basic idea of there is, you know, a world near where the regular world is and it's fantastic. I'm like, you know, even discounting Neverwhere, that's not exactly a brand new idea.
No.
You know? And it's a fun, interesting thing to be like, yeah, you know, whether I'm going to fucking Wonderland or Narnia or whatever it happens to be, being like, oh, I was in a normal place and now I'm in some weird fantasy land.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah.
But when you try and tie it into, like, the actual history and locality of a place, you start running into possible issues.
Let's say that. Let's just say a sensitivity reader would have been helpful here, but in 2000, I don't think those were things yet.
No.
I mean, they might have been. Yeah. But basically, yeah, because you have things like, well, the homeless population of New York. What if you didn't have to worry about the homeless so much? Because they're not just homeless. Usually they're just up there gathering stuff to vend it down below to the magical creatures that live there. And every homeless person you see is just resting on his way on his break between mystical fun time adventure times.
Well, I mean, the fact that the book's like, oh, and don't worry, I'm not talking about the homeless that are there because of, you know, the fact that we shut down all sorts of mental hospitals and quit resources to help people with any sort of issue.
Mm-hmm.
No, no. The other homeless people, the fun ones.
Yeah. Or what if we put a micro zone that you could adventure in that's just exactly where the Triangle Shirtwaist fire happened? And so when you go there, even though you don't know what's going on exactly, it's all hot there and you can hear the screams of hundreds of ghost women.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want it. I mean, that's the thing is, I like the concept, like the Narnia thing, like you were saying, like
yes.
Going to Narnia. It's a fun kind of transition into fantasy. It's a neat way to do a storyline, and I even like when they connect it to the world above, where they're like, you know, we're taking some of the neat stories about New York and changing them and playing with them.
No, there's a fun idea of the juxtaposition of the mundane and the fantastical and modern and, you know, like fairy sensibilities.
Yeah.
This crossover, especially when you look at something like this or say, you know, like Narnia, where you're like, oh, we remember the modern world and we know about it, but then we are thrust into a weird other world.
Yes.
And so having those sort of, oh, I have the sensibilities of a regular everyday dude, but now I have to contend with Christ Lion.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, in Neverwhere was the same thing. The main character of Neverwhere was a guy from the world above who accidentally got stuck in London's underground.
Yeah.
Some dude
accidentally a Coca-Cola bottle, and now he's in the Neverwhere.
Yeah. And then by the end of the book, he's like, wait a minute, this is the best thing you could do, because down here I'm fully aware of the world above and can go up there if I want to, but also they're never aware of me. I can do whatever. I'm off the grid.
It's too late. I've seen it all.
But this is a very LARPy game. Almost yes. All the resolutions, in fact, I believe all the mechanics of the game are handled through coin flips.
Uh-huh.
Which ultimately I feel like I'm going to immediately replace with dice.
Eh.
Maybe that's just me. That way I can do them all at once. I don't have to be like...
I mean, you could just take a handful of dice and be like, or coins and just go, meh.
I know, but then you got to like catch them. I get it. I get why they did that. It's visually very neat to flip a coin and catch it. But when you're like, okay, for this one, you have to get four heads on five coin flips. I'm like, that's just going to be... I guess I'll stop after I get tails twice. That's the one thing I'll know.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, because it's supposed to be, these are rules for LARP and tabletop. They're like... Well, we didn't want to come up with two different resolution systems,
mm-hmm.
So we'll just use coins because that's a thing you can actually do while you're, like, sitting out in a fucking forest or more likely in...
rec center.
Yeah, some rec center or an actual subway
convention
station
hall.
If you're,
yeah.
You know, in New York for some reason.
Yeah, so it's a LARP game, which means that the rules are fairly scant. There's not... I mean, they're comprehensive. It's got a wound system. It's got resolution mechanics. It's got skills. It's got the basics you understand of, you think of when you think of a role-playing game. But it's very simplified to allow for quick play.
Yeah.
So what can you play in this game?
Oh, well,
you have a couple choices to make.
Yeah, when you're making your character, your two big things for making your character are your breed
mm-hmm.
and your guild.
Yeah.
So your breed is, you know...
What you are. Yeah.
Because a couple of them are, you know, you could be humans, but there's a lot of options for other stuff. So you could be, for instance, just an intelligent animal.
Yeah.
The feral is one of the breeds where it's like, oh, yeah, you know, anytime an animal runs away and, you know, like goes fucking around in the sewer, so you get a lot of feral, like, dogs and cats and rats and
mm-hmm.
stuff like
raccoons,
that.
Raccoons, and there's a whole population of alligators down there.
Obviously,
yeah,
you gotta have the albino gators.
That's one of the best things to do if you're writing a New York underground story, is that part of it.
Yeah.
That's fine.
And so, you know, you can just be like, oh yeah, you're one of these.
Yeah.
You can talk with people, that's fine. You have your own animal language, and you know,
you're obviously going to suffer a penalty on certain fine motor control skills unless you're playing like an especially competent Colobus monkey or something, or Colobus ape. I don't know. So yeah, each breed you choose has a couple of benefits and penalties to it, but really that's all it is. Some of them offer a couple of bonus skills that you get like one extra die in, but most of them just kind of give you a thing they can do and a thing they're bad at, and that's it.
Yeah. And of course, all of these have a list of traits mm-hmm. that you can pick from, and in the breeds, some of them come with extra skills, not all of them.
Yes. So defining traits, as they're called, are basically, for example, I'm looking at freak right now. What freak is people who have they're weird in some way.
Yeah.
In this book, it is almost exclusively they're weird in the form of being like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Like,
kind of.
They're not supposed to all be like that, but
you can be like, what are you? I'm basically a Minotaur. That's a freak.
They're all, for whatever reason, I don't know if it's just coincidental, but so many of them are like animal themed.
Yes.
There's like a bat one, a Minotaur one, a dog head one.
But I mean, basically anything that is sort of humanoid, but not like a regular person is going to end up being a freak most of the time.
Yes. And their defining traits are things like strong, agile, tough, intuitive, perceptive, fast, clever, etc., etc. You get to pick a couple of these, and each one that you pick gives you a single extra coin flip when the resolution you are trying to determine involves that thing. So if you're tough, then it's when you're trying to resist damage, you get an extra coin flip.
Yeah.
If you're strong-willed, it's when you're trying to like win an argument or resist losing an argument. And each one of those traits also has a negative variation, which isn't in any list anywhere. So, for example, if you have agile, the opposite's going to be clumsy, and it's just if you choose that, then now you're
minus one
coin, exactly.
But you get to pick an extra trait.
The other thing that the breeds provide is what's known as radiance level, because there's a thing about the deep underground of New York that the subway system is a series of magic runes that subways full of people ride every day, accidentally contributing tiny amounts of the magic in their souls to this giant magic.
That's why everybody network. On the train in New York is just kind of like, ugh, because all of the magic is getting sucked out of them every day.
Exactly. Yeah, they're losing all that magic. And so the deeper you go, the higher the radiance level. And the radiance level can be downright dangerous to people from the overworld if they get too close to it. But it can also do things like fizzle out technology from up above. If you're down in the high radiance, then your computer will stop working, your gun will jam.
Yeah, the general idea is the overworld has a radiance level of zero.
Mm-hmm.
Once you get into the actual, like, subways and the tunnels like that are real close, you get radiance level one, where you're like, oh, things can be a little weird, but it's still mostly okay. Once you start getting deeper and you hit radiance levels 2 through 5,
mm-hmm.
those are, oh, well, now shit is just actually magical, and anything more complicated than, like,
a stick,
a blunt instrument, it just doesn't work.
Yes. So, to continue with these, the Feral, the first one we talked about, has a radiance level of 1, because you are a very slightly magical animal.
Yeah, now you talk. So, yeah, now you can talk.
Then after that, you have things like the Freak, which we've talked about at length, the Junk Man, which is a robot built out of random junk from the underworld. It is not a functioning robot. It is a magically functioning robot, which means that they have a radiance level of 2, and they cannot go up to the radiance level 0 world without falling apart.
Yes, because technically they are a pile of junk shaped into a semi-humanoid form that is inhabited by a ghost.
Yes.
That's a junk man for you.
There's legendaries, which are probably the most recognizable thing straight from, like, Neverwhere. Legendaries are basically concepts, old gods.
Things that are, like, they spring into being from the imagination of everyone above.
Yes.
So, you know, you might have, like, Medusa is a legendary. There's straight up the devil is a legendary named in the book.
The more commonly seen legendary in the book is a guy named Isaric Dane. And he is the legendary of Flatfoot detectives.
Yeah, because you can be an actual thing or the idea of a thing.
Yeah, so he's just like an always gets his man, old-timey noir detective man.
Yeah.
But he's like the god of, or not really the god, but like sort of the concept, the legend of that.
Yeah, he's that personified.
He's the personification of that, thank you, yeah. They're the other one that has a radiance of 2. They're not supposed to be up in the overworld.
No, if junk men or legendaries, the Radiance 2 people end up going up above.
Mm-hmm.
They start taking damage even at Radiance level 1, and if they go to 0, they have like a couple rounds before they just die.
Yeah. There's the homeless.
There is the homeless.
You'd think they'd just call this one, you know, folks from the above or above worlders or
well,
something.
The problem is you already have the like the regular upworlders one where it's like, oh, you're an upworlder, but you're basically the protagonist of Neverwhere where you're just some guy who gets trapped down here.
Yeah.
And then you have ones that are, oh, I was from up above, but I have no idea how I got down here. The Lost are yeah. anachronistic upworlders.
Yes. Yeah. The problem with the homeless, I mean, ultimately, Richard, the main character of Neverwhere, was like a dude who had a house and a wife and everything.
Yeah.
But when he accepted help from a person from the underworld, he kind of became of the underworld. And the moment he gets home, there's like other people living in his house already because he doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
So that he's theoretically homeless because he doesn't have a house. Other people live in his fucking house. But anyway.
Yeah, but that's not how this works.
No, I know. It's different. The other thing about the homeless, every one of these has a list of epithets that people call them.
Yes, indeed.
Underground. So it's like junk men, for example, are called like TikToks or clunkers. No one calls them robots, oddly enough. You'd think that'd be the common one.
Yep.
But the homeless have one, all right. It sure is that Roma slur showing up again.
Hell yeah.
Mm.
Boy, howdy, you gotta love that shit. Now, I do want to say, boy, I'm glad this came out in the year 2000.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The year 2000. Yeah.
But yeah, you get the homeless, you get
the other one. You mentioned the Lost, which I think was the other big one we hadn't gone over yet.
We've got a couple. We've got the Lost and the Nomads.
Oh, right. The Nomads. And I think the Mole People.
And the Mole People.
Yeah. Okay. So I completely forgot about the Nomads. Yeah. So the Lost, like John mentioned, are anachronistic. They're people who are like, they're all from the past. They're never from the future.
Yes.
And they are people who, for whatever reason, have accidentally found themselves transported into the modern day. They have very slight abilities to control time, and the more of them that are in an area, the more powerful they become. And this is amusing because they make this point out about how, like, if you had like a dozen of these guys together, they could rewind time by several hours. They become increasingly powerful the more of them there are. But it goes on to heavily stress this never happens. That no one ever gets big groups of Lost together. It's not it's just not done. And then when you get back to the section that's like locations, there's one that's just like an entire British fort from the 1760s.
Yeah, just a bunch of redcoats got sucked down here, and it is an entire group of them.
That's like 200 of them.
Yeah, you're like, oh, that's okay, sure.
Whoopsie-doos. Forgot what you wrote earlier when you wrote it again.
Whoopsie-doopsie.
The mole people are literally that. They are just people who are vaguely mole-ish, who live underground and are small.
The thing with it is, the art for them straight up looks like they're wearing fursuits.
They look
like the head is too big.
Yeah.
And it just really, God, it really reminds me of a fursuit. Also because it's got that kind of like cartoon animal look. So it's got the furry art style.
Well, there's about four artists that work in this book and they are very distinct. One of them only draws like real people. So it's all these kind of very serious, ragged drawings and so on.
One is pictures.
One of them is photos. The person who only ever draw, or who, the only person who draws mole people, they draw other stuff as well, has a very kind of anime hip hop at the same time aesthetic, where all the mole people are drawn like deeply, like wearing their pants super sagged down with cool hair, urban haircuts. And, also they kind of all look like Joe Campbell's rebellious teenage niece.
Yeah.
They don't look like moles at all.
No, they do not look like moles. They look like furries. And I'm like, that's fine, whatever, but the fact that you call them mole people is very weird to me, because they look much more like a cat than anything.
Depending on which one you're looking at. This one looks like a cat, the other one looks like a camel. But neither of them look like moles.
Yeah, depending on how they do the snout.
Yeah, the other fun artist in here that I like a lot is the person who drew the art for the Nomad. Nomads are... this one's weird, because you've already got people who are displaced in time, the Lost, and you've already got people who are like immortals in the legendaries, but Nomads are like people from the distant past who didn't realize they were immortal, and now they live now.
It's people who don't know what happened in their past. They are immortal now,
mm-hmm.
but they don't know how they became immortal or who they used to be before they became that. So it's like, oh, I went to, you know, Leith and drank from the river in the underworld and then became immortal, but I lost all my memories.
Yes, so they are, they're all amnesiacs, but they're all also very tough, cool fighter dudes. The artist for them is the one who draws only very 2D flat plane anime looking things where the belts are, sorry, the gloves and the boots are comically too large.
Yeah.
And you see that style a lot. They all, big thick outer lines around everything.
Thick.
They're competently done, but they look like they should be doing like art for a promo for Maple Story and not this. It's just weird.
Yeah.
Beyond that, now you pick you pick one of those. That's your breed. Then you're going to pick your guild, which is kind of what you do. Guilds constantly are springing into and fading out of existence as aspects of exploring the underworld become more popular. But right now there's a core set of guilds that are
and this isn't
dominant.
Like you pick your guild like, oh, you pick your class. These are literal guilds with guild halls. Mm-hmm. And if you want to do certain things, including fight. That's a guild.
Yeah.
The Bravos are a guild and they are the only people who are legally allowed to do violence. And because of that, it makes an interesting thing where it's like, yeah, if I start a fight and I'm a Bravo, then like, oh no, the city guard comes up. The city guard are also Bravos. And they're like, cool, dude.
Yeah. There's this whole thing where because they're union, they're unlikely to get on each other's case, which means if you're a Bravo, you can pretty much murder people in daylight, broad daylight. And then a bunch of town guards are going to run in and they'll be like, oh, you killed him, huh? Well, you probably should get out of here.
Yeah, if you're a Bravo, you can murder someone in broad daylight. Or, you know, if say there was some sort of problem and you should be using your license for violence to do something, you could just not, but there's no reason you have to.
Yeah, like the book pays lip service to this where it's like, hey, you know, what happens in the deep tunnels when there's no witnesses? Obviously, that's okay. If monsters attack you down there, obviously you can commission your own violence act against them because you're not going to get hauled in front of a tribunal. Who's going to see you and report you, huh? Nobody. But the upshot of this is that all the stories in this book, and there are a lot of them, are about Bravos because they're all about fighting.
Yeah.
And they don't want to write stories about someone else because so every one of them is either about or heavily features a Bravo just coming in.
Yeah. And I mean, there's a bit of the, like, sort of Terry Pratchett-esque amusing thing of, like, oh, man, you're going to get in trouble if you assassinate someone with a non-guild assassin.
Yeah.
And, like, there's a very Discworld guild idea behind the things here that's like, all right, that's fun and playful. But in an RPG, if you're like, yeah, I'm the one dude that can actually fight, you're like, cool. I guess I don't do anything then when it comes to fight times.
Yeah, it kind of makes sense from like a LARP perspective.
Yes, and that's a lot of the guilds in here. Once you get past Bravos, you're like, oh, this is very clearly shit for LARPs because you have things like librarian where it's, what are you? I sit in a place with a library and I know things and I trade out secrets for other secrets. And I'm like, yeah, that's the perfect thing to be if you're all playing in like one little fucking like rec room somewhere and you're mm-hmm. like, yeah, I sit in one corner and I put like a book of notes in front of me and people can come walk up to me and it's fine.
Yeah.
And I'm playing that role. That's fine in a LARP, but in a standard tabletop RPG, if you're like, I have a library. All right, well, we're going to go do an adventure. All right, well, have fun with that, I guess. That, or I leave my incredibly worthwhile tomes and room full of information alone while I go gallivant about.
Mm-hmm. So you may be wondering what guilds get when you pick one for yourself. First, they get a few more defining traits that, again, you get to choose some of. You also get a list of skills. If they are skills from your guild when you were choosing your guild, you get them at 2 coins, like basically rank 2. If you have skills that are not from your guild, they're at 1 coin. You also get a list of magic you get to start with. In this game, some of them start with nothing. But if you start with magic at all, there are two or three kinds of magic.
There are charms.
And rites.
Charms are just like little magic things you can do.
Mm-hmm.
Rites are big magic things you can do, which no one starts with, because those are like
actual
plot MacGuffins.
Yes.
And then there are relics, which are warehouse 13 items.
Yeah. They're the big, they're the huge important things. Like the slice of pizza that Pizza Rat was dragging is probably a relic.
Probably.
Now. Yeah, that's the kind of, that's what relics are. They're singular. Where charms are more like, they're jokes. Most of them are jokes.
Most of them are jokes, but they're all just like, you know, the classic thing of like, I have a soup stone, I can put this stone in a pot and it makes soup.
Yeah, right. I have beer goggles, but they don't do what you think they do.
No, beer goggles, they let you see instead invisible let stuff. Me see in the dark, and then if I get a good enough success, I can see invisible.
Right. So that's what you get when you pick one of these guilds. The first one we didn't mention yet is Artificers.
Yep, they're the ones who can make junk tech.
Yeah, they make their own junk tech, which is almost kind of a third type of magic in this game, is crafting complicated junk items that do bespoke interesting things but have a super complicated and unfortunately virtually impossible to use.
Boy,
did they ever
there is the, you know what, we'll get into it when we get into
we'll
the
get
systems
there. We'll get
anyway
there.
Artificers, they have the ability to make magic items that only work underground because they don't actually have anything that makes them work beyond magic.
Yeah,
it's you know, it's very, you know, techno wizard from Rifts, where it's like, oh, this isn't an actual like mechanical thing that's working. It's just someone shoved a crystal inside of a gun and said, now it shoots lasers, and lo and behold, it does.
Yes. No, I like that kind of thing. I like belief-powered items and
yeah,
so
that's
on.
Fine.
It's neat. And unfortunately, though, much like how, you know, the orcs, just because they have like a psychic belief-powered 40K that makes it so their trucks work instead of fall apart, here, artificers are powered by being insane.
Yep.
And the more insane they are, the more more cool things they can build.
Yeah, you get more coins to flip on your invention rolls the crazier you are, and you have to start crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to go into the back and the list of different crazies you can be. Great. Pick one. There's three stages. As we all know, there are three stages to every sort of mental problem.
Yes, and every mental problem is categorized and written down, and definitely when you have a lot of it, when you're like really unfortunately afflicted with mental problems, that's when you can build the coolest potato cannons.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. We already talked about librarians. There's mendicants, which is this game's healer. They have a unique ability to straight up just heal, but it does give them temporary wounds when they do it.
Yeah, they mostly do the empathic healing where they're like, they'll take your wounds on.
Mm-hmm. And other than that, they are aggressively boring.
They're wandering healers.
Yeah. Navigators, which are this game's riggers. They start with a vehicle.
They are the only ones who get to do vehicle stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mostly they're really useful for scene changes.
I mean,
they're one of the cooler classes.
It's,
I mean,
one of the ones besides Bravo that you're like, oh, that's useful.
Yeah. Because
like, oh, you're a dude who has a way to get around. So if we want to do dungeon delving, that's cool. We can go dive into the cool deep tunnels and this guy can get us there. And then the Bravo can fight stuff.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I guess the Artificer sits in the back and is like, I have a comic version of obsessive compulsive disorder. Teehee.
Here's a grenade.
I'm going to flip this light switch 12 times and then it turns into a little can of soda that walks.
Yeah. One of the major NPCs in the stories in this book is an artificer, a homeless artificer named Lord Steam. And Lord Steam, in almost every story he's in, is doing violence right in front of a bunch of Bravos. Now, you may wonder, well, how's he doing that? Should they be stopping him? Well, no. You see, he's really important, and he won an important fight against an important darkness monster once, so he's like a legend now and can do whatever.
Yeah. Well, he's he's too cool to arrest.
Yeah. The next one is Sappers. This is the kind of thing where, like, they make sense,
in the lore of the world.
Yeah, like, you need someone digging the tunnels because the tunnels need to be dug. The act of digging tunnels is boring and slow, and so you don't really want to do that.
Well, yeah, it's like, what is this guild? Oh, they can dig tunnels and reinforce tunnels that are already there. So, because, you know, you're always in need of maintenance on any of these tunnels.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, is that a thing that I would want to do in a game? No.
Yeah, they have a list of special abilities that I would describe as the most useless in the game, and that's, you know, a lot of these things are like have car or is homeless, but even this one's like, what are your special abilities? Well, they get to do a 3-coin head count, and a head count in this game is just a clever name for flipping coins, the number that you're supposed to, and counting the number of times you get heads, which is a success. They can flip 3 coins, and if they get 1 success, they can determine the rad count of the area they're in. We already talked about radiance earlier. Rad count is just the amount of radiance. That said, it would be much easier to skip doing that and determine the rad count of an area by trying to use technology. Because if the game master, or I believe the conductor in this game,
mm-hmm,
says, subtract 1 die from that, hey, you know it's rad count 1 here.
Metagame knowledge.
With 2 successes, you can determine the directional heading of a nearest area with a higher rad count. That's actually kind of useful.
Yes, that's the one thing where you're like, oh, okay, yeah. If I'm making a tunnel and I'm trying to get to a better rad count area.
Or a safer one, because I don't personally have a high rad count. And with three successes, you can determine the directional heading of a nearby Radiance pool. Radiance pools are...
The games for PC, and they were notoriously buggy. Pool of Radiance was absolutely unworkable. It might delete your entire hard drive.
Yeah, I think the deal with the Pool of Radiance was if you tried to uninstall it, it deleted your hard drive. Yeah. But this one's a problem because it has a parenthetical attached to it. Like, determine the nearest Radiance pool. Radiance pools, jokes aside, are pools of pure magic that are immensely powerful and incredibly dangerous and used to power the most powerful rites in the underground.
Oh, yeah. And it's, you know, all of the most important people want it. If you manage to find one, selling off the information of where it is to any of the various lords would be super expensive. Like, it is the one thing you could do as a sapper that would be like, this is my cool big thing.
Now, you're thinking three coins all need to be heads for this to happen. That's a 1 in 8 chance of it happening. That's already kind of super common to find something so incredibly important. But it gets better. That 3-coin head count is your base. If you have a skill in sapping or engineering, you get an extra or a coin or two for that. So you can get up to 5 coins for a single roll. That's the max. So you have a not terrible chance of hitting this. But the parenthetical is like, hey, look, conductors, nearby is relative. make sure it's really far away, because Radiance pools are super powerful and you don't want to fuck up your game. Hey, if you don't want to fuck up your game, you know what you could probably do is not give people a power that immediately fucks up their game and then tell the conductors not to let them use it.
Yeah.
That'd fuck up your game less.
It is so unfortunate. Every time we read a book that's like, here's an ability. Hey, guy running this, don't let them use this ability. Hey, my dude.
Or if they use it,
backspace, my friend. Yeah. It is a go-to item that you can use to get rid of a thing that will fuck your game up.
Yeah, and in this case, it does work. Like, if you get three successes, it's like, hey, there is another nearby rad pool in New Jersey. You know,
3 miles down.
Yeah,
it's like, all right, well,
never mind. Thanks for that. Sure, I'm glad I hit a really difficult roll so I can learn useless info. What a great mouthfeel that gives me.
How wonderful. I'm glad I picked Sapper.
After that is Tagger. Taggers are basically the
scouts.
Even though we already had a class called navigators, they're the closest thing to actual navigators.
Well, they're the scouts, because yes. They're the ones who go out into tunnels, because the navigator is more like,
they have
I'm the taxi man, whereas the tagger is like, I go into the deep tunnels that people haven't been in, and they have their own little tag language, where if they make a tag on a wall, it basically gives you hobo code for like, oh, down this way, dangerous beasts and high rad counts. And
yes, this is a problem. You can leave hobo or not hobo. You can leave tags of your own to alert other taggers to things. And you can even instill your tags with magical charms that you have. Like, there's an example here for hot rocks. Hot rocks are just two rocks, or if you're touching them together, they release the heat of a campfire. So that's just kind of a useful thing to have, because it's really cold down in the underground in a lot of places. But a tagger can, like, take those hot rocks and magically shove them into a tag he puts on a wall, so it radiates out campfire heat if he wants, you know, and make a warm wall.
Yeah, if you get near it, you're like, oh, hey, neat.
Yeah, so that's kind of a useful effect, I suppose, especially because there's a lot of trappy effects that happen among the charms. The other one, though, when you're playing as one of these guys, is like, well, you can write tags on walls that other taggers can read, so hopefully there's another tagger around and you need to send them an important code message.
Oh, it's almost certainly there for
the NPC.
Oh, it's a thing that you find where you're the PC tagger and you find some tag somewhere and you're like, guys, I have information now because the conductor threw me a bone.
It's like playing an old, like, I know 5th edition diviners are like the best wizard, but it's like playing an old diviner where you're like, I cast augury. What do I learn about the future, DM? Whatever I tell you and nothing else, your entire class is powered by my whims.
You learned the plot hook that I want you to go follow.
Yeah,
please follow
it. You're playing the plot hook aggregator, and if you weren't playing that, I'd still have to put the plot hooks out.
Yeah.
I'd just do it a different way. After that is the traitor. Again, this is the kind of thing you built for LARPing. Mostly this is homeless and animals, because they're the ones who can go up topside.
Yeah, because it's mostly, there's not a lot of stuff in the underground. There's not really, like, manufacturing down there. Food is pretty much just what can grow without sunlight, so some mushrooms and algae.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the actual, like, economics of the underground is, like, traders going up and, you know, those homeless people with shopping carts. Oh, no, that's just they're taking it down to the underground to sell off.
That's not their worldly possessions that they constantly have to defend from being stolen by police or other people when they have to leave them for even a moment. That's just their magical trinkets and wares that they go to peddle below.
What fun peddlers.
Don't give them money. They won't know what to do with it because in the underground they use ducats instead. They get to start with a shopping cart.
Good for them.
Hooray! This is garbage.
Yes, in a shopping cart, but you sell it.
Yeah, and then the last thing is there's a couple more that are just like, don't play this.
Yeah, it's the outcasts.
Which is when you've been kicked out of your guild.
Yeah, you did something fucked up and they kicked you out.
Uh-huh. You still have your guild powers, but like now the guild hates you and you can't get support from them.
Oh, yeah.
And then the guildless, which are like people who are in the underground.
Just regular folk.
Just regular folk. Don't play as that unless you literally want to be Richard from Neverwhere for some
reason.
Like,
yeah, they're like, guildless is here as an option in case you're like, I just want to be the random upworlder who found his way down here. Great. Now I'm guildless and a regular dude.
Yep. So,
now when you're making your character, after you pick your breed in your guild, you pick one trait from breed, out of the list of different traits they have there, one trait from your guild out of the list of those. And then you can pick any one you want as sort of a wild card trait.
Yep.
And like we said, that just gives you one more coin in whatever circumstance that that trait can show up in.
Absolutely. And also, you can get one for one if you take the negative versions of traits.
Up to two more.
Up to two more. You can take a couple of extra positive traits if you want to.
And then you get all the skills from your guild, and then any ones from your breed. Not all breeds come with them. Some will give you, like, oh, you can get scrounging, but you're getting it from your breed, and then you get a list of skills from your guild.
Mm-hmm. And then finally you pick three more skills.
Yeah, you get some secondary skills that are just one coin added instead of two.
Mm-hmm. And your guild will also provide you with a list of charms that you can select if your particular guild starts with some charms.
Yeah, usually it'll be like you can pick one or two from a list, and most of the charms in here range from mildly useful, like the whole hot rocks, you can make a campfire with some rocks, great.
Yeah.
To, like, oh, I have freeze tag as a charm. I can cast a charm on the tag pulled from a mattress, and if I touch someone with it, then I make a 3-coin flip, and depending on how many heads I get, if I get, like, 2 or 3, I freeze them in place.
Yeah.
Freeze tag.
Colors is another one, because it was, like, the gang colors.
The problem I have with some of these, getting into the charms, is some of them are actual, like, magical effects that you'll do in the moment. Like, freeze tag, you roll or flip when you actually touch someone with the tag.
Yeah.
Great. Things like colors, though, are like, oh, this, you do a 3-coin flip.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives you extra coins to resist damage based on how many heads you get in the flip.
Yes.
There is no way to, like, it doesn't have a, you can't cast this as many times as you want.
Yeah.
So you can just go, all right, I get a shirt. I cast colors. All right, you got 2 heads. Cool. I throw it away. I get another shirt. I cast colors until you get 3. And then you go, great, I use that one.
I guess I had not thought that that was the way that charms work. Maybe there's a passage I missed or something. I thought they were one use items.
No, charms are,
they're just spells, you know, basically
spells. You
okay,
know,
that changes things. I thought, I mean, I know that they're all, they list the magic item or the mundane items you need to get to make them. But I guess that means that what your charm really is like, well, what is a color? It says here it doesn't even say what it is. I assume it's just
clothes, and you cast a spell on it, and if it, however many heads you get that much resistance.
But like, for example, if you want to cast Free Ride, which is your ability to just ride any subway anywhere you want with skip the metro lines and all that, that requires a metro card. You have to get a metro card, and it gets used up when you use it, and if you want to do it again, you have to get another metro card.
No. Metro card, the Free Ride is just, you have a card that lets you ride for free. Oh. Every time you just go, dink, this is my little item that I can use.
Yeah. Some of them are, though, Protective Incense is another great example. Like, eventually that incense is going to burn out, and that means you have to cast that spell on another set of incenses, I assume?
Yes.
Yeah. So they are.
Some are, like I said, some are like, oh, yeah, this has a scaling how useful it is.
Mm-hmm.
in the moment, and some are when you get it.
Yes,
and
like so the colors ones, is a problem.
Yeah, the ones that are like colors, and there are a few more in there that are like, oh, this gets you a certain number of damage based on what your role is. And you're like, I keep doing it until I get the best one then.
Yeah.
Fuck you. Like, I don't understand. If I can just do this all the time, I'll just do that.
I mean, it barely matters because, I mean, what colors does is it, for each success you get, it adds you one resistance level to the resistance of the armor you're getting. And resistance levels in this game are coin flips you can make to...
But it's 1 to 3. The heaviest armor is 3.
Yeah.
Which means colors can give you the heaviest armor by wearing a shirt. And normally...
No, I know. It's great.
You have to have a defining trait of, like, being strong in order to wear the 3 armor.
Yeah. But, I mean, ultimately, you could get the 2 armor and throw colors on it for 1 more resistance. And then you don't care if you got the high level of colors or not, because all you needed was that extra 1 level of resistance.
Well,
Let's talk about the resolution mechanics in combat and so on as that all works.
Oh, you didn't want to talk about the other magic shit?
Do you want to talk about more magic shit? Sure, we can.
I mean, we're already in it.
Sure, let's keep going then. Here, enjoy the book, my friend.
So outside of the little goofy things where you're like, I have a pack of smokes, and if I hit it on my hand 3 times and then finish a cigarette, someone will show up to take me somewhere.
Yeah, there's a couple different vehicles, because there's also the subway rails. I forget what they're specifically called. They're like
There's
magic coins.
There's tech that is the subway skates.
No, that's not what I'm talking about. There is another charm item. It's usually one of the stories where you flick coins at the third rail and it summons a subway car.
Yeah, there is the whatever it is. There's some coin that you throw onto the third rail.
Yeah, the third rail in this game is very important.
Yeah, it really is.
It shows up in a lot of the junk tech. It's in a lot of the magic items. A lot of stuff's just powered by the electricity off that third rail. But yeah, there's a whole bunch of these charms, and a lot of them are just gags. It's fine. They don't go into rites, because ultimately every rite is going to be seeing a single bespoke thing that is going to be the kind of the thrust of the story you're trying to tell more than anything else.
And even in the charms where they're like, oh, these are just one-off minor little things you can do, there's Daedalus Twine, which is, oh, this will show you the way through a labyrinth. And then there's another one, which is just a light that shows you a way to where you want to go. And I'm like, oh, just get the fucking glow stick then.
Definitely get the glow stick, because the Daedalus Twine has, it just says it lays out string.
Well, it lays out string in front of you to show you through a labyrinth, whereas the glow stick is, it glows and shines a light toward where you want to go.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, it works in labyrinths and literally anywhere else? Great. It's Daedalus Twine, but not as useless.
Plus, Daedalus Twine always has that same problem it has in the actual story, which is that someone can come along behind you and just pick it up. In this case, I guess it's someone sees it out in front of you and just picks it up.
Well, I mean, you're just walking behind the twine, rolling it back up.
Yeah.
The rites we mentioned are like, you know, you can do the whole Sleeping Beauty. I put thorns around a kingdom or, you know.
Yeah, a lot of thorns show up in that description.
A lot of fairy tale shit. Yeah. It's like you can put someone to a magic sleep that can only be awakened by true love's kiss.
Yeah, you can harden the surface of a lake so that it can magically trap someone to the surface below.
Yeah.
It's all like magic-y stuff.
And then the relics are various magic items, like we said, that are imbued with ideas of things. These are the big magic items.
I just remembered why you're doing this now.
Yes.
Your tone just made sense to me all of a sudden.
So some of them are like, oh, it's the key to the city. You have a big novelty key. It can open any door. It can like make it so that traffic flows the way you want it to. It's literally like, I can control New York, which is weird because it's all I can control upworld New York.
Yes.
And they're like, this is the most sought after item. I'm like, why? It does nothing down here.
There's one that's based on Romper Room, like the show Romper Room.
There's the Romper Mirror. And you can, if you say
Romper, Stomper, Bomper, Boo,
you can look and find anyone you want to. But some people are now calling it Beauty's Mirror because this dude was obsessed with the fact that the Disney Beauty and the Beast didn't have the ring that let you teleport home, and instead had a mirror that let you see things.
Because
it has Beauty's ring, and he's like, but this is fading because people keep forgetting the real one.
Also, Philoctetes is a satyr now, and not basically Hercules' shitty little friend who eventually murders him on accident.
Also, there's a gun, and it's the gun that from Berkowitz.
It's the Son of Sam gun. And it's not the actual gun. None of these are the actual thing. That's part of the story. They are created by the dreams of the millions of the world above.
Yes.
So this one's created in 1977 during the Son of Sam event of New York. And it's the gun that it's the personification of the gun that David Berkowitz used to kill all those like college girls. And when you use it, it has superpowers. But notably, it makes a dog bark noise because of the dog that told him to kill people.
Yeah, I mean, it does basically twice as many coins of damage as anything else would.
Yeah.
Because, like, oh, a gun normally, you know, a high-end gun does, like, 3 coins worth of damage. It does 6. But also, when you pull the trigger, a dog barks.
Yeah. But don't worry if you think that this one might be unbalancing your game or in poor taste, because the only reason it's in this list is because it's in one of the short stories in the book where it gets eaten and ripped apart by a subway monster.
Huh?
So don't worry, it's not, you're not, players are supposed to have it. A cool bravo from one of the stories is supposed to have it.
Yes, and one of the relics, the one you were thinking of, is a summoning token which summons a train.
That's the one. It summons the last train, which is the train in question. I think it can summon any
train. No, it can summon any train, yeah. But it can also summon the last train, which is actually a monster.
The last train is a monster. It's part of the old story about when the MTA there tried to do a late train. And the late train now is like this horrible monster that if you go inside it will eat you.
Yeah, well, it was like, oh, the magic of the New York subway system was such that the way that it ran mm-hmm. was creating a magical pattern. However, adding a weird train that didn't run on the schedule made it so that the magic kept getting fucked up and weird, and it made the train come alive and turn into a monster.
Yes. So after magic items, we get into salvage tech, which is stuff that you can build if you're an artificer.
Yep.
Notably, someone really liked drawing little robots made of soda cans, because that's almost all of this. Well, in terms of art, but the actual stuff you can make is all kinds of neat things.
Yeah, and they're put into different categories, which mm-hmm. gives different levels of complexity for how many successes you need. So, you know, it could be I'm making a transportation thing or, you know, a gun or something that makes an item, whatever it happens to be. There are a bunch of different things, but they have lists for like, oh, if you want this gun to be ranged, that's 2 complexity. All right. For every coin of damage it can do, that's 1 complexity. So
let's say 2 damage, 2 coin and range 2.
Okay, so if you do it at a distance, that's 2. Mm-hmm. It does 2 damage, that's 2. You need 4.
Yeah, and that's split. It's because you have to focus it into the materials, the time it takes, and I forget the last one.
And actually, like, making it.
Because
there's planning, make it, or, like, planning materials and building.
Yeah, so you take your final complexity number, divide it by 3, and then need to hit each one of those 3 rolls. And it still has like an amount of time it's going to take. It's a surprisingly complicated system considering it's basically for LARPing, but I get it because to stop the artificer characters from just spooling out stuff constantly. It does include one of my all-time favorite things to come across in role-playing games, which is someone hitting an incongruous, impossible set of coin flips and the book just breezing right past it like it's no big deal. There's a guy who invents a gun that when it shoots people, it turns them into ducks.
Yes.
And it has a complexity to build of 12, which means that he needs to do 3 4 success coin flips, and he gets 5 dice per flip, 5 coins per head count, rather.
Yes.
Which means that he has like less than 8% chance.
I mean, getting 4 out of 5 is not great.
There's a chart in here to tell you how not great it is. But yeah, he needs to do that 3 times in a row. He needs to hit 4 out of 5 coin flips 3 times in a row. First one, hits it. No problem. Great. Good for him. He hits a 4.
Yeah, second 4 out one, of 5 is 18%.
Yeah. Fails it. Fails that 18% chance the second time. What does failing a roll do? That's why I'm telling you the story, by the way. If you fail a roll, it just takes longer and you need to try again.
It increases the difficulty.
And it increases the difficulty to 5, the maximum difficulty, and the maximum number.
Oh, it's not the maximum difficulty.
Sorry. It's not the maximum difficulty, but it is the maximum number of coins you can roll.
No, it isn't.
I thought for sure that coin flips count are capped at 5 at every single thing in this.
5 is usually as high as you can get.
That's fine. There's like there's extenuating circumstances. In any event, he has to hit a 5 die coin flip or a five coin flip on all heads on 5 coins, and he just does.
Yes.
He just anyway. After he clears that, says the book, he has to do 1 more 4 coin success. No problem there. His duck gun is built. Quack. And I'm like, no, that is a problem.
No, you see, you gave me like an 18% chance and then an 18% chance that then got lowered to like a 10% chance, and then another 18% chance.
Yeah, and then you just nonchalantly described it as happening, despite the incredibly unlikely event of that being the case.
Yeah, the reason the artificers generally can go above that is because your level of insanity adds extra coins.
Okay, that's
so
fair.
You can
that's
get fair. Up to like 8 if you're super crazy.
Yeah.
But the thing is, if you want to make anything that is better than just having a regular, like, yeah, the range, the distance to damage thing is like, great, you made a shitty pistol. Awesome. It's exactly like any other pistol, but you made it out of junk and it doesn't work above ground.
Yeah.
Awesome. Then, sure, that's sort of easy to do. The second you want to get into something that's like the duck gun, where you obviously will never make that roll,
mm-hmm.
or the junkmen are that species, that breed,
mm-hmm.
that are made by artificers, and they are difficulty 20.
Yeah, so even dividing by 3, you need to hit like 7, 7, and 6.
Yeah, it's just like, no, you don't do that.
Notably, Lord Steam has a weapon he calls the Jacob's Hammer, because it's based on a Jacob's Ladder.
Yeah, he shoots electricity.
Shoots electricity. They mentioned it as having an incredibly high complexity, and then just don't bother to tell us how he did that.
Yeah, I mean, you can go backtrace it to be like, all right, well, it's at a distance, so that's 2. It does 5 coins of damage, so that's up to 7.
Mm-hmm.
It never needs to be reloaded, so mm-hmm. that's another couple complexity. Yeah. And I think it also does like stun or something.
Yeah, it has stun effects. I think it has an accuracy bonus. It's just an incredible gun, but they just breeze past how he built it. That don't worry about it. That's not important.
Yeah. But yeah, there's a bunch of list of things that you could make, and
then we get to the setting.
Yeah. But let's get into now. I will no longer talk about the magic shit. We can get into the actual rules of shit.
And we're only at 1 hour.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, the rules are, you flip a coin. How many heads did you get?
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, exactly. Initiative is determined by coin flip, and then fighting is determined by coin flips. The neat thing about combat in this, I will grant them, is that it's got an advanced mode and a...
It's got tabletop and LARP mode.
Well, mostly, I feel like both of them are useful as LARP mode. That's the thing. What it has is a narrative combat mode, and then like a detailed close-in combat mode, where you're actually rolling attack and defense against each other over and over again until someone wins. But you can also roll this like narrative mode, where you just roll, or everybody just flips a bunch of coins at once, and then they calculate the result, and you'd be like, great, now I'll tell you the story of what happened during that combat, and we don't actually have to do it piecemeal.
Yeah, you essentially go, how many advantages do I have,
mm-hmm.
Versus how many advantages they have? We flip our coins, and then we just go back and forth using advantages to either
flip
increase
them
our
yeah.
flip up to a heads, or their flip from heads down to a tails, and you need to get 3 successes in order to win.
Yeah.
So you just kind of go, all right, what's the math on this, and what did we flip? All right, well, we can go ahead and determine neither of us won. Moving on.
Yes,
let's
exactly.
do this again.
Yeah, and I think they're both useful in LARP terms, because if you're dealing with like a group that's not that interested in fighting, you can use that second one, just tell the story real quick and move on. But if you've got like 2 bravos in your LARP who are just like, I would like to describe every single flourish and coruscating spiral action I perform with my mighty Dao swords. And, you know, then yeah, you've got this piecemeal version so that you can, you know, let them fuck off in the corner and do this for 20 minutes.
See, but that it won't happen that way, because it's LARP, which means it'll just be like, my dude, I want to hit a guy. Do I hit this guy? No one is here to fucking flip coins for half an hour at the LARP.
You don't know.
I know.
Maybe
it's a LARP.
Someone's there to flip coins for half an hour at that LARP.
Look, we're not here to fuck spiders or flip coins, okay?
And then there's a wound track system.
Everybody has 4 wounds.
Mm-hmm. And each wound is divided into like some sub-wound levels.
Well, I have no wounds. I have 1 wound. Ow. I have 2 wounds.
No. Like, you can take damage. You can take light wounds. And 3 light wounds will move you to medium. And then if you take another light wound while you're at medium, you have to take like 9 of them, because each 3 of them will turn into a light wound. And then 3 light wounds will turn into a medium wound.
Is that?
Yes. Yeah,
wow.
that's how this is.
Because when I read the wounds thing, it was like, dude, if you take 4 wounds, you die.
No, I know.
If you get 4 heads on an attack, you are dead.
I don't remember what they're called, but there's like sub wounds inside the wound system.
I mean, they do have, they call them like light wound, heavy wound.
Yeah. But I think a base character has 3 levels in each wound. And if you have things like tough effects and so on, then you can have extra levels inside of your wounds.
Huh.
Yeah, so that's how that part works.
All right. I apparently did not read wounds closely enough.
Mm-hmm. Or I'm just completely making all this up.
Because that is definitely how it works in other games that have wound systems.
It's how it works here, too. But yeah, that's it. There are ways to jack up the number of sub-wounds. Yeah.
I want you to jack it up.
Okay, let's jack it up a little. Now, should we talk a little bit about the setting? I mean, we've already kind of gone into it.
Sure. All right. It's underground New York. All of the places in New York have their underground version.
Mm-hmm.
So you're like, all right, under Brooklyn is Crooklyn. Underneath the Alice in Wonderland thing is Wonderland, where the fucking redcoats are.
Yeah, that's a weird one.
There's a bunch of various little things, and they all have a lord.
Yeah, they all have a lord that's in charge of them. Like, for example, Philippe the dog-faced boy from, like,
the carnival.
Like, P.T. Barnum fame.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And all of them have a lord that gets sort of statted out, and also you know where the various, like, guild halls are. So it's like, oh, okay, this is where the Artificer Guild Hall hall is. This is where the Tiger one is.
Yeah, the Artificer Guild Hall in particular is in the Manhattan Projects, where, like, the nuclear bomb test developments were done. And the idea behind that is that artificers can't be trusted because
they're like, oh, you might blow yourself up, so be out in the boonies.
Just go way the fuck out there where you're nowhere near anyone else. And then
they
should
have just put them under Staten Island.
Yeah, or the statue. Did they even mention what's going on under the statue?
Not that I saw.
I'm guessing probably because there's no, like, underground landworks that go under the Statue of Liberty.
Exactly.
But still, there should be natural ones that do. That'd be really neat. Sea caves and stuff.
Oh, yeah. I was like, oh, you should definitely have, like, there's a deep tunnel that goes under the water underneath these areas.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, if you go under Ellis Island in the deep caves with high radiance, like, you come out not knowing what your name is or some shit.
That is part. There is a thing where there's a huge lake or underground bay down there that the only navigator that shows up in the stories will operate. He sails it all the time in his boat that is also a car that is also climbing capable.
Yes.
All the vehicles work. They're also built via complexity and salvage tech.
Oh, my God. The complexity for making a vehicle that works in land, air, and sea is more than making a junkman. It's like 23.
Yeah, it's incredibly high. But there's this cool bay down there that has this thing where the reverberations of the water against the walls that it goes against will drive people insane. So most people who have to sail in the bay put wax in their ears. But the navigators there have gotten used to it, so they just seem crazy to everyone else. So that's kind of fun.
I mean, most of the problems I have are, I mean, we brought up the whole homeless thing. When we brought up the fucking, like, shirtwaist fire thing,
mm-hmm.
like, there's a lot of things in here that I'm like, man, all right, great. You wanted to embrace all of the parts of this. And as I said at the beginning, oh my God, I'm so glad this was in 2000 and not later.
2001? Yeah, no.
Otherwise, we'd have the legendary personification of terrorist living in the underground, and I know it would be in there.
Yeah, that would have been, especially if it had been written much later. Like, if it had been written in 2003 or something, they would have been like, ah, no, it's too soon, we can't do that. But if it was written, like, last year, then yeah, it would have a ground zero spirit.
Ugh.
So we can be thankful it does not have that. That's nice. It does have a big recommended reading list, obviously Neverwhere, that seems very obvious. But also, of course, because of his constantly writing about magical cities that have more magical cities merged into them. China Miéville shows up a lot here.
Yeah.
He gets a ton of recommendations. I know he has fallen out of favor quite a bit. But, you know, it's 2000, so.
You know, it's 2000.
Yeah, I don't think he had fully shit the bed yet. So that's, it's not a terrible recommended reading list. I thought that was kind of neat to see. But yeah, a lot of it's just sort of not tasteful.
I mean, like I said, there's a weird line to walk with this in having something be tied to a real world area. And when you're like, yeah, we're going to do, like, make magic items off of fucking Berkowitz, and we're going to have homeless people as fun, magical, friendly guys who trade bits in the underworld.
Let's not forget the Puerto Rican street fair.
God, the point where it talks about legendaries and the whole idea that they can't go above ground because they're just made out of radiance. So if you go where there is zero, you'll just dissipate.
Yes.
Now, it's not enough for them to just die and dissipate. Goodness, no. Instead, it like blow up into a brief area of whatever they are.
Yes. So there's a legendary monster of violence and carnality being chased around by some Bravos.
It was basically rape the personification.
Yeah, it was like a big snake or something, and they were chasing this big monster, but the Bravos who were chasing it stopped when it went up to the overground because it was going to burst anyway. And when it burst, it infected a Puerto Rican street fair, which devolved into a mass gang rape.
Yep. Yep. That's a thing in the description of the legendaries where they're like, oh yeah, and one time the personification of, you know, rape went up and then exploded and made a bunch of Puerto Rican guys, you know, have a rape festival. And everyone was like, oh, they wilding.
Yeah, they were like, they're wilding more than usual. And I was like, oh, that's...
This is...
I don't like that at all.
Oh, it's okay. You see, it's not that all Puerto Ricans are rapists. Sometimes they're possessed by a weird spirit. Oh, ho, ho! What fun and joy in ribaldry!
Yeah, I get where you're trying to write, like, dark twisted fantasy or whatever, but maybe... Maybe not rape.
Maybe don't.
Maybe don't.
Maybe don't do that.
Just don't do that, because it's distasteful and I don't want to see it.
Yep.
So anyway, you want to get into favorites and least favorites?
Let's go ahead and do that.
Let's do that. What would you say is your favorite thing about Underworld?
It is a game that I think has a simplicity for a lot of the aspects that while they are very much for LARP, I'm like, this is fine for a tabletop if you wanted to do this. Like, the simplicity of just, like, man, just count heads, I don't care.
Yeah.
See how many you get, and you'll do that.
Yeah, or the combat version where you just flip heads and tails back and forth.
I hate that, actually. I like fucking hate the narrative version, because it's literally just, we look down, we won.
Yeah, it is true. Once you look, you have two inputs to consider. What's your starting base coin flip list, and do you have more flips than the other guy?
It's just, how many advantages did we get?
Yes.
How many, what did we flip? What did they flip and how many did they have? All right, we know if we won or not.
Yeah, that's fair. That's very fair.
I'm not as into it.
That's fine. That's okay. But you are into some of the more, the other abstract or quick play variations on this game.
Yes.
All right.
I like the idea of the charms. Like, that's the kind of fun little magic thing that I like, where even the ones that I was like, this is super abusable because you could just, you know, do it until you get max. Even then, you're like, okay, but you get max, and then you just have that item, and it's not game-breaking.
Yeah.
It's just very useful.
Yeah.
So that kind of, like, ooh, fun folk magic thing, that's great. I'll go ahead and say the folk magic charms.
Sure.
What about you?
I kind of like that the list of guilds is very conducive to LARP play.
Oh, yeah. Not so much tabletop, but it's great for LARPing.
Yeah. As a LARP play listing, the fact that a lot of people go to LARPs and don't really want to participate in a combat class, you know, they don't.
No, the whole point for a lot of people is I just want to interact with other folks.
Yeah, I just want to stand in a room and talk to a bunch of people and be important while I'm doing it. And a lot of the guilds in this game lend themselves well to that. So I think that's smart. You know, a lot of the time when we come across LARPs, they clearly are just tabletop where they've made the rules simpler. But here we see a LARP that seems to have been built for LARPing. So that's nice.
Yeah.
What would you say is your least favorite thing in this?
Oh, I mean, it's got to be the tone-deaf parts of it.
Yeah, yeah. You can just take all of that, and that's fine. I've got other stuff.
That's fine. Okay. Yeah, I'll just take all the things where it's like, you know, the Berkowitz gun and the fucking rape festival and all that shit. Just like, you didn't need to. And there's not a ton of it, but it keeps showing up enough that you're like, my dude.
It's like a horror movie. You're guaranteed a terrible thing about every 5 minutes of reading.
Yeah.
Just like when you're watching a horror movie, you should be scared every 5 minutes.
Yeah, every section of this book, there's one thing where you're like, oh, you fucked up.
Why did
you
do that?
The dark horror thing, instead of having like, oh, this is fucking Berkowitz's gun, they have a knife that's like, yeah, someone got knifed and a ton of people like watched and did nothing, and this is that knife personified of like, you can stab someone and no one will stop you. It's the shame of New York.
I think that's also a real story.
It is.
Yeah.
But it's the kind of thing where they're like, oh, this is an urban legend.
Yeah.
And if you want to do that as a kind of thing, then that's the type of dark fantasy thing where it's like, yeah, it's dark, but it's not like, and here's the name of the person and they're in jail now and they killed a real person named this.
Yeah, like still alive.
Yeah. That's not a good thing.
Yeah, you don't
maybe wanna... don't do that.
Yeah, yeah.
So there you go.
It's kind of like that vampire book that like blamed a bunch of stuff on
yeah, it was like, "Oh, yeah, fucking the gay people are getting
murdered in some
by
country.
Vampires." And you're like, "Nope.
Don't do that. That's not what's happening."
Stop.
They did not set up a gay people eating farm there. That is real people doing a real hate crime.
That is actual atrocity that you are putting in your book, my dude.
There's an easily drawn line. Is the asshole from the story dead?
Is this far enough back that you don't need to worry about it being someone's trauma currently?
Yes. Yeah. So I would not.
Your least favorite thing.
I think the species are kind of boring, and ultimately my least favorite thing is also that I don't want people thinking I'm kind of downplaying the
I mean, I already took it, so it's fine.
Yeah. I think the species are weirdly samey between them. The homeless are just kind of in bad taste.
Yeah.
The junk men are kind of neat, that because they're unique, and so are the legendaries. Those are kind of fun.
The ones that are like, oh, you can't go above ground,
yeah,
are interesting, but the ones that are just like, you're a homeless guy, but magic, I'm like,
but also you can play as animal people, and one specific kind of animal people. Those are three of the breeds in this.
You could play as a mole person, or a mole person.
Yeah, or you can play as someone who was lost in time, or someone who was lost in time. So I feel like that probably could have used a little extra development.
A little zhuzh.
I get, you know, you can kind of see the seeds of what they're coming from there. If you look at the cast of Neverwhere, and you're like, the Marquis is legendary, Richard is an above grounder. Doors is probably a freak or also a legendary and so on. I just kind of found them a little on the boring side. The mole people in particular felt like they were like a Kickstarter backer reward to include a species.
No, reading it, I was 100% like, oh, this is just the artist wanted his thing in there.
Yeah, that might also be it. I don't know, but because it's from 2000, it's like too early for Kickstarter back rewards. But when I was reading, I was like, man, this feels like a fan submission.
Well, I mean, they say in the book, like, oh, several of the charms and things in this came from when we were playtesting the thing. And I'm like, 100%, I guarantee you, mole people was this dude's.
Yeah, like a freak. And they were like,
breed. And they were like, I want my own breed.
Yeah. Would you play this game?
Okay. So, the idea of it is interesting. The idea of magical New York, I'm fine with. I mean, there's a Dimension 20 season, which is Unsleeping City, which is basically this.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the idea. I like the idea from Neverwhere and all that other shit.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I would get enough out of playing in this that I would want to play it. Because this isn't a hard no, fuck this.
Yeah.
It's just one of those... I don't think I would enjoy myself enough
mm-hmm.
to want to do it.
Yeah. I noted that there's already a Neverwhere RPG. It's in its third edition right now.
Uh-huh.
So you don't really need this if you're desperate to play Neverwhere. I've never read it, so, you know, take that with a grain of salt. It might suck. I don't know. But there is a Neverwhere RPG, and I believe it is currently free or pay what you want on DriveThruRPG, no less. So go check it out. Pay a lot of money for it and use our affiliate link to get it.
Yeah, go to SystemMasteryPodcast.com, click on the link, then buy it.
And for an exorbitant sum.
And we'll get a tiny
free.
Amount of that.
I know it's free, but pay an exorbitant, a king's ransom, if you please.
Yes, and instead of going to SystemMasteryPodcast.com and just clicking on the give us some money and giving us money, instead give us a tiny amount of store credit after you pay too much for something.
I want 5% in store credit of the king's ransom. Yeah, no, but I also don't think I would necessarily... I mean, like you were saying, it's not really a hard no. Like, the stuff in here that's in poor taste is mostly like...
Easily able to be removed.
Yes. Other than the one rape that's not even a joke, it's like a horror story.
Yeah.
This time where a street fair got infected with rape ghosts, and so everyone raped everyone else. Like, if that had come out in an era where people cared, that would have been... Remember what happened to Exalted 3rd Edition when they had that one charm that was kind of a... like a ravishing charm?
Oh, yeah. Well, in the playtest when they're like, ooh, the bad guys can make ghosts... basically fuck you, and they're like, nope, don't have rape ghosts.
Yeah, this is if this book had come out a lot more recently, of course it's a Gareth Michael Skarka book, so instead it would have not come out more recently.
Yes.
Yeah. But anyway, that's right, I don't think we even mentioned that
earlier.
We
didn't mention Skarka at all.
Yeah, I forgot to mention this book's by Gareth Michael Skarka, who most people nowadays, I mean, he's a prolific author, but most people nowadays are mostly known for how not prolific he is when it comes to his game Far West.
Yes.
Yeah. Or his
past the 10-year anniversary.
Yes. I had to do a lot of research before I made this a book that we could review, because I've seen his name being cursed and damned by so many people often because of Far West. I was like, okay, he's got to be doing something else that's worse. And it turns out, no, apparently a lot of people just kind of think, not me, I've never met him or even read it. This is the first thing I've read by him, but a lot of people just kind of think he's an asshole. And that's not enough for me to be like, never touch.
We don't cancel people for being assholes.
Yeah.
You can be an asshole and still be around.
Yeah, exactly. That's how I managed to have this show.
Exactly. Yeah.
Folks, I'm an asshole. Are your parents around? I need to tell them I'm a registered asshole. But yeah. Anyway, I it's not a hard no. I just don't know that I would necessarily really.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it's a soft no from both of us.
There you go.
A rare soft no.
The rare soft no.
Otherwise, hey, would you like to support us? Just head on down to DriveThruRPG and once again, pay a king's ransom for a free game, or you can just go to patreon.com/systemmastery. Support us at any of our levels to unlock the content where we make bonus content out of this game. We're going to make characters in it. We're going to describe them. We're going to describe their relationship with the world and what they're like and where they came from. We get pretty in-depth. Sometimes we even find out more things about the game that we might have missed.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to happen this time.
Not this time. There's not a lot.
Not much to it.
Not a lot of meat on the bones here.
It's not a bad thing. This game's deeply story invested.
Yes.
But ultimately, I don't think we're going to miss much. But that's okay. It's still going to be a fun time. So come on down, patreon.com/systemmastery. You can start unlocking that as low as the $1 level.
$1.
Yeah, but you can go up to the $5 level to unlock way more stuff, like 7 podcasts a month levels of stuff.
Yep.
So why not do that? Or just, you know, buy our books. We have so many books.
We have a lot of books.
We wrote books. We're authors now.
Books.
Mm-hmm.
Hey,
buy our books.
Books.
So thank you so much. I thought you were going to do something and you weren't.
I have no bits left in me.
All right, well then I'm going to cut this one off. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. I hope you all have a wonderful week. And until we see you again, you have a good one.